Welcome along to the Playthrough Podcast.
Just say when.
This is Mess, and this is episode number 108, I'm happy to announce, and I'm joined by Andy.
Hello.
Jim.
Good evening.
And Christopher.
Are you really happy to announce that? Or
I am. I love numbers. You know me. A good number. It just makes me happy.
You only like two numbers.
He looks happy. He looks like it made him happy.
Okay, which numbers is that then, Chris?
Zero and one, of course, mate.
Ah, yeah, true. But I can't just rattle off the binary version of 108 without a bit of preparation. So
yeah.
I won't do that.
Quite possibly the most nerdiest thing anyone's ever done as well.
I've done lots of things that are a lot more nerdy, so no worries there. So we are still talking Dishonored 2, but we've finished the main game, and we're going to be talking about the standalone DLC. What do you want to call it? It's like an expansion of Dishonored 2, same engine, same environment, I guess, but it's a small standalone game, 5 missions called Death of the Outsider. And spoilers, the Outsider can die in this game. I don't know about you guys. We always talk about whether we should do DLC directly after playing the main game. We did, again, as we've done so many times before. And it had the same effect that it usually has.
We're a bit slow in the update.
When will we ever learn?
When will we ever learn? Everybody was loved the original game, but was kind of burned out when we got to this.
I don't know. I was ready for a bit more.
Ah, that's good.
I was still ready for a bit more.
So I had done two full playthroughs and a half playthrough in the with the no powers thing. So I had done Emily in low chaos, Corvo in high chaos, and then I think it was Emily halfway through in the no powers run. Mm. So I was a bit Dishonored 2 weary at this point, but still ready to see what Death of the Outsider had to show us.
Yeah, I'd got no intention. I really didn't want to go through the main game again.
No.
So like just having like the extra story and the new setting kind of gave me enough to put in another 10 hours. Whatever.
Yeah, I felt like that going into it as well. That was my thinking as well. On reflection, and I didn't hate this at all, but on reflection, I kind of would have preferred to go through the main game again.
Yeah, I had a lot more fun going through the main game the second time than playing Death of the Outsider, for sure.
Yeah. With hindsight, I wish I'd done that. And probably left Death of the Outsider, but we'll get into it.
Yeah, let's talk about it a bit. There is something in Death of the Outsider that caters just directly to you, Chris, because one of your criticisms was whole energy system for the powers, and the powers auto-regenerate here. There's like 3 power points, and if you just stand still, they'll all be replenished by themselves, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you got to play around with the powers.
Yeah, and you can get another one as well. So I got picked up a bone charm, which gave me a fourth little segment on that meter as well.
Yeah,
which is cool. Yeah, the other thing it does as well, which I appreciated again at first, and I don't know whether I cooled on this over my playthrough, was that it gives you all the powers all at once, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the first mission, you don't have any powers. And then it's only when you rescue Dowd, isn't it, at the end of the first mission, you then get the powers. Yeah. No, hang on. She loses her arm to the outsider, doesn't she? That's when you get the powers.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's after the first mission.
But she's already lost her arm, hasn't she? And he kind of gives her this new mechanical kind of thing.
Yeah, what is
magical
that?
Thing, right?
Yeah. It's in the perineum between missions, isn't it?
And it was a bit weird because my Billy actually had her arm because I in my final playthrough I knocked out what's his name? You know the
Sokolov.
Yeah, no, not Sokolov. The guy who had the mansion.
Oh, Jindosh.
Jindosh, yeah. I knocked out Jindosh so he didn't go crazy, and that also meant that Billy didn't rob his house earlier on and got attacked by guards. So she had her arm and her eye.
What?
Yeah. In Dishonored 2, in my full in the playthrough I did after we finished recording, I knocked out Jindosh. I think wasn't it you who told us that we could do that? I think it was Chris. Anyway, somebody told us that we could knock out Jindosh and then he wouldn't be driven crazy by seeing this whole by meeting.
In the mission when you in that special mission, it wasn't Jindosh. It was the one...
No, it's not Jindosh, you're right.
It's the one where you get the little book.
It's the fantastic one with the time travel.
I forget what his name is right now.
Yeah, forget the character.
Aramis Stilton. Exactly, yeah. I knocked out Aramis Stilton, and that when you create this new future where he is still just the owner of this mansion, he's not gone crazy, and there's money there and everything. It's more of a happy place, and Billy Lurk won't have tried to break into that place because he rewrote the history there, and so that means she hasn't lost her arm and she hasn't lost her eye.
But none of that carries through to the DLC.
No, it doesn't.
So what is the canonical version of all that then?
It must be that you don't knock out the Stilton, because in this game she starts with one eye and one arm, right?
It's definitely not killing Sokolov either, because she proceeded to tell me all about how he'd gone on to do all these other things.
Yes. So it's like,
no, he didn't go on to do very much after I'd finished with him. So
nobody would kill off Sokolov, of course.
but Billy herself was dead in my game, because I threw her overboard.
Oh, yeah, that's true. So that's why you didn't like Death of the Outsider. You didn't have anybody to control.
It's a short game, yeah.
this is the problem, isn't it? When, like... I only have one version of Dishonored 2, and it's my version, It kind of it felt a bit jarring because there were some callbacks to Dishonored 2, which I didn't really recognise.
Yeah.
And there's loads of,
trying to ease yourself into your, a new playthrough, and the first two or three or four pieces of information that it's giving you, and quite key information to you, is incorrect. So it's very then hard to invest in it, because you think, well, no, this isn't the game that I've just played, and invested those hours in. You know the reasons for it, but at the same time, it would be much smarter and neater if one literally dovetailed into the next.
Yeah.
I don't know about how you guys feel about this, but a part of my problem with, I think, both main Dishonored games is that I didn't really feel like a massive connection to the characters. Like, I quite enjoyed the story on a superficial level, but I didn't really feel that invested or massively interested in any particular character. So, like, given me control of Megan/Billy, whatever you want to call her, I didn't really feel like much connection to her as a player, and that instantly kind of disconnected me from the story a little bit.
Yeah, I was interested, because I wondered if that'd be the case, obviously, with us going straight into 2 and having not played the first, and I didn't even look at any of the lore from the first or anything, so I was just trying to fill in the gaps as I played through the second. I wonder if that was maybe why I wasn't having a particularly strong connection with the characters, but it sounds like it was maybe just a bit lightweight in that respect anyway.
I really liked the lore of Dishonored 2, and I liked Corvo and Emily, mostly because I played the first one, I guess, so I had some connection to them. But yeah, I didn't feel anything particularly towards Billy.
I liked playing as Billy, though. I think if you're playing a slightly more kind of high chaos or sort of high lethality run, then she seemed like the best fit for that.
It feels more sort of in character, doesn't it, than playing with who's like someone who's royalty and is supposed to be, ruling a kingdom.
So Billy definitely killed everything she got close to.
I was a bit more liberal with the old murders as well in this one.
Yeah. But even maybe I think some of the weapons and the designs of them that it gave you, to me, it was basically, felt like the game was more pointing you towards that type of play style.
It's also because it is definitely more towards the violent play style, if you ask me, because you don't have your sleep darts there's lots of stuff that you don't have. Actually, let's just quickly talk about that. There's only 4 powers, and there's only 4 pieces of equipment in this whole game. So it's a lot more limited than when playing through Dishonored 2, where you had lots and lots of powers and weapons to play with, or at least the different kinds of ammunition for the different weapons. So here you have something like the blink. It's called Displace. And instead of just blinking directly somewhere, you place a misty copy of yourself, and then you press again to jump to that place. I like that, actually.
Yeah, that's good.
You can get a bone, can't you, to turn it back to how it is in Dishonored 2.
Yes.
To basically just turn it into Blink.
Yes.
Exactly. Yeah. But you got this place, and then you got Semblance.
Yeah, it's called. Probably my favorite.
Yes, part. Love that. They didn't use that enough. That's actually, you literally rip the face off somebody and wear it yourself for a while. Did you notice that when you do it, their face just becomes this black mask?
Yeah, it's just like a shadow, isn't it?
Yeah, a shadow of themselves. Yeah. So you rip their face off. It doesn't kill them, but you can't do it to them. No, you can't do it when they're dead, can you?
No, they've got to be unconscious. You have to do it while they're alive. And you can only do it once.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Because it puts them unconscious when you do it. Interestingly, it doesn't kill them, does it? So you can still use Semblance. If you were playing this and going for a zero kill run, you could still do Semblance because it just leaves them unconscious. But you can't. I like the little nuances to it. You can't do it if you're being watched.
No.
And if their body is discovered, your Semblance. Yeah. Comes off.
Yeah, that happened to me. I didn't know what was going on. And the dogs
all suss you as well.
But, mate, only if... So if you have a bone charm which prevents you, the dogs from smelling you, they won't. They won't suss you.
Ah, okay.
They can only suss you if they can smell you. So I loved a lot of thought. I was actually reading a little thing earlier about someone saying one of the devs saying they weren't sure whether Semblance would work. They thought it'd be too difficult to implement and everything else, but actually I think it turned out to be, it was my favorite part of the whole of Death of Outsider. Every time I used it, I felt you know, you get that slight bit of anxiety when you're walking past guards and you're thinking, oh, is this gonna work?
If this runs out and I'm in the middle of the room, I'm in big bother.
And then it took me a little while to twig that it only, your mana meter only goes down when you're moving, doesn't
it? Yes, yeah. And if you're running, then it goes down quicker.
Yeah, so you know I think it might be Mission 2, where you have to go to the auction to buy the thing from the pharmacy, I'm not being very specific.
Yep.
You need to go and buy a drug or something.
Oh, is this for the bank heist?
Yeah.
And then you put it into the one of the options is you can put it into the ventilation system. Yeah, I know.
So I kind of semblanced someone and just wandered into the auction and bid on it whilst using the semblance because I didn't really have to move around.
Nice.
Yeah. I just felt like opened up the possibility space.
I loved using Semblance. There are places where you need to use it as well. You can't really enter that singer's house without using Semblance, can you?
At least the only way
I found to enter that house.
There's another access.
Okay.
How did you get in, Andy?
I just went in the door.
Yeah, but you can only go in through the door if you look like this woman who's in love with the singer who's been writing him.
Oh, so yeah, you can pick up a secret knock.
Yeah, you can pick that up, but you need to do the secret knock and look like the woman.
No, you can do the secret knock sufficient.
Ah, I thought you had to do both. I did both.
Yeah, okay, no, so maybe it's one or the other, but you can get in just the so I used the secret knock and a maid comes and opens the door, and the minute she opened the door, I killed her just to make sure she didn't close it.
Ah, okay.
And then you could go inside. But,
so I was welcomed in because I look like the woman.
Ah, okay. I was white. She was about to slam the door in my face.
So there's another way in through, you know, next door there is the eyeless, like, private club.
Yeah.
You have to have the tattoo of the eyeless on your arm. And
that's how I did it.
You can get the tattoo from the tattoo parlor.
Yeah.
And then you can get into the... You can get into the club, and then there's an access into the singer's house from one of the top floors.
Oh, yeah, I saw that when I entered the club afterwards, and I did see that there was an access into the
That's how I got in.
Okay.
That's one thing. I know there's multiple ways of doing the missions in Dishonored 2, but it felt like it was spelling them out a little bit better in the DLC. And like with a bank heist, it told you can do this if you want. Like you can use the ventilation stuff if you want with the drugs pharmacy. You can find another way. I ended up going in through the roof.
I didn't kill anybody.
We'll get to that mission at some point. I had a horrible experience there because let's just say it now. I used the drug to tranquilize everybody who was in there, and I wanted to see if I could do it without waking anybody up. And I spent like an hour walking around. I was everywhere. Nobody was getting up at all. It was great. Then I went into the cellar, and I hadn't knocked anybody out. I hadn't choked anybody. I hadn't done anything. I hadn't touched anyone. But there was this point in the cellar after you disactivate the floor. There's this electrical floor you need to be careful of. And when I just had to walk over that floor, there was no electricity anymore. I just had to walk to the other end of the room and go up with the elevator or the stairs. Somebody upstairs would spot me. And I couldn't. I tried. I must have reloaded 50 times trying to figure out what's going on here.
Was it a clockwork soldier?
No, because nobody could see me. The clockwork soldier was to my right.
So that's in the archive, right? When you've got that electric floor and you've got...
Yeah, exactly. It's in the basement. It's in the basement. Mm. You need to go there. And I couldn't leave that room without being spotted by somebody two, three stories up.
That's annoying.
Such an annoying bug. And it just meant that I had been so careful to go through this mission with the whole everybody sleeping and it was good fun. And I couldn't finish it like that. And when I went up, everybody was awake and I hadn't killed anybody. So the room was full of people. I had to slaughter. That was so annoying.
I managed to announce something over the tannoy in the bank and it woke everyone up.
I wonder why.
That's a good mission, that. You know, I'm lukewarm on Death of the Outsider generally, but actually, other than the last mission, I enjoyed moment to moment on the four of the five missions.
Yeah, me too. There was lots of good stuff, but also not enough for even in those missions. I think there's something wrong with the structure of the missions, if you ask me.
Do you know,
as a little puzzle, they're good. Each of them are good, but there's something wrong with the mission structure because of the way they did the extra missions. You know, you had these wanted posters. If I was to tell anybody who was going to play this game for the first time anything, any good advice, it would be don't bother with those missions, because what I did, which I always do, is those are optional. I'll do those first. And that meant that when I had to do that, they're interwoven into the real narrative as well. So I would do all these side missions. And then when I had to do the real mission, it turns out, you've already done like 55% of it. And now you're doing it out of order. So the narrative is falling apart.
You've already done. Yes.
Exactly. Yeah. For example, I didn't even know that singer guy had anything to do with the main mission at all until after I've rinsed his entire mansion and done everything, because there was a side mission there. So I destroyed the narrative for myself by trying to do those side missions first.
I did the exact same on that one. I think I pretty much completed an entire mission by just frolicking effectively.
Yeah, me
and
too.
Then obviously there must have been something I'd done that effectively triggered off the final event in that. And as I say, it reeled off literally, I think, six or seven ticks just kept coming up. And I was like, okay, so I'll, and then, because I think it, cause it actually filled it out for you and it would come up with the next objective. I said, all right, I'll go and do that now. And then it would tick off like, oh no, wait, I did all that. And then it would just keep going cycling through. So
yeah, I had the exact same experience.
See, I'm much preferred
flawed design.
I much preferred the way they did it in the main game, where there wasn't a ton of optional stuff, and maybe there could have been more. But when there was, it felt a bit more like tied into the main narrative, you know, like the one in one of the early missions when you had to go and recover the corpse and it was for a character that came back later. Again, don't think there was a lot of it. I wonder whether they could have made a bit more effort to actually have put some side objectives in for sure, but have it felt like it was baked in, rather than you get these contracts and they're just nothing, you know, they're just random. My brother kind of lent some money to a barkeep. Can you go and take him out? You know, and what isn't one of them to kill everyone in a level apart from one guy, you know, or something like that?
Yeah, that was one of those,
yeah.
I don't know. Just
like I put him in the chair, but it didn't trigger because I hadn't killed everyone in the level.
Yeah, that's it. If you miss one, then you're scouring around. You know,
I didn't bother go scouring around, but I put him into the chair.
Yeah.
No, it seemed like busy work, and it didn't really add anything to the overall narrative for me. Yeah. And as I said, as you did as well, Andy, it kind of destroys the narrative if you go for them.
Yeah.
So, and for anybody who hasn't played this game, in every mission, you start out by finding the black market. You're kind of led there. And at the black market, there'll be three or four wanted posters or whatever you want to call them. And you can have a look at those, and those are the side missions.
Yeah.
But please just beeline for the narrative instead, and then do the side missions if you happen to be next to them anyway, doing the narrative story.
There is a good one where if you do a little bit of digging, you go into the safe, and then you get a puzzle where you have to work out the safe code to unlock everyone's security box. You don't get a lot for it, like a bit of ammo and stuff like that, but that was a good little puzzle.
Yeah, is that in the bank again?
It's in the bank again,
Did you see Morgan use safety deposit box there in the bank?
What the reference was? So I didn't see that, but I saw that in the Discord chat talking about a reference to Prey, but...
Morgan Hughes got a. I thought that was pretty cool. He's got a safety deposit box in the bank.
Just to close the loop on what we're talking about previously with the. Did we talk about the third new power as well?
No, Foresight is the next power, which is pretty much time stands still, and it's kind of an out of body experience, isn't it? You walk out of your body as a ghost, and you can walk around, see what's actually going on and where people are, and so on.
Did you find that when you used that, it felt like you were entering a really shonky level editor?
Yes, or like
flipping through things.
Or like, can you remember in Halo 3? I think it was Halo 3. They brought out like an editor, like a camera where you could like swing it around and take pictures and stuff like that. Yeah, it felt like that.
That's exactly what it felt like to me. And then one of my, not necessarily a criticism, to me it was, I'd said it would be a good quality of life improvement, maybe more like the more modern Metal Gear games, was that if you were able to subsequently mark targets and then follow them around, but you had to do it within that mode, unfortunately. And I didn't like how that mode worked. I couldn't really, because you couldn't really use it indefinitely, then I found it quite difficult to, it just wasn't an enjoyable thing to use. Whereas I think it would have been better if you'd just been able to, as you saw people going about their business, it's just mark them and then like sneak away and find somebody else and mark them. And then you're always aware of where they are at all times, but you had to do it through that rather dodgy.
How would they? How would you explain in game though that the character was able to do that?
Look at all the other abilities again.
Superpower or something.
Yeah, you're effectively marking them. You know, it's some sort of mark you're putting on them. Yeah. Or have a rat follow them or something.
Yeah, it's a stupid thing for me to say, when you can blink and display it from place to place. Do what you want.
Yes. I mean, there would have to be a bit of thought to put into as to, you know, to make it seem convincing, but definitely doable.
Yeah, I mean, I know what you mean. It's a bit janky, isn't it, when you're in Foresight mode and, like, the camera always falls. So I was constantly what button is it again to make it go up?
And I think it was. Yeah. I think that was the other thing. I think they were back to front as to how I would normally use stuff like that as well. So
But actually, what I did quite like, I quite liked the kind of time-limited duration of it because, it, although you could just wait till you magic recharges and kind of go again, it felt like, you know, right, I want to mark that and I want to set a displace marker there and I want to do this and I want to do that. And actually, once the enemies were marked, like in the main game, the biggest thing I enjoy in this game is actually kind of working out the enemy's routes, getting myself in position and then taking them out. And that is made more fun when you've marked them because you can see where they're going. So that, again, you know, that, and for me, like, that never got old in this game, kind of sneaking around, taking out the enemies in a level. It's just fun. I just find it fun, and I was finding it fun right until the end. And that Foresight just, it was just another way, wasn't it? I feel like what I didn't use enough was the ability to set displace markers in that mode.
Yeah.
Because you had to, like, see the displace. In order to actually then displace to that marker, you had to have line of sight or be within a certain range of it, I felt.
And it had to be something that you could physically fit through as well.
Yes.
You
couldn't do it through bars or anything.
Yeah.
Although I did manage to rob a black market, which is the only time I did it in the second mission, by doing the foresight through like the little rat run.
Okay.
And then setting a displace marker behind the black market worker. Okay. And then because you can see obviously through the little hatch, displacing in and making hay, it's worth doing, isn't it? You end up with tons of stuff.
I actually didn't rob any of the markets in this one.
No, I didn't in this one. But I never ran out of ammo or anything. Well, I think that's and I always had plenty of money to buy stuff.
Yeah. I think there's plenty in game anyway, to be honest. One thing I did like about this, it was kind of almost a nod back to the Fallout games like Fallout 3, was that there was a mod you could put on her weapon that basically allowed you to shoot junk out of it. Not that type of junk, but like junk, like hens. And so it was great. You basically had pretty much unlimited ammo while you were out and about, because it was, you'd go into somebody's office and just snatch some pens off the desk or all this sort of stuff. And then it wasn't even like it fired it out as just garbage. It basically just converted it one for one for projectile. So I think it only cost, I think it was maybe the second upgrade. So it maybe cost about, I think it was like a, I'm misremembering, but maybe like a 300 and a 400 coin upgrade. So it wasn't much money compared to how much you're having to pay for ammunition. And then you effectively had an unlimited supply of ammunition from that point onwards.
Did you buy that bone charm then, or did you find it?
No, it's just like an upgrade.
It's an upgrade. Yeah, it's a skill tree.
It's an upgrade at the blacksmith's.
Oh, so upgrade for what?
The vault fire or whatever it was called.
Yes.
Well, I didn't see that. That sounds like it.
It was well worth it. Because that was a mistake I made on the first game, was that I went in and got very excited and bought loads of ammunition, loads of grenades, all that sort of stuff. And then I think it was you that actually said it, Chris, realised there was all these subsequent pages for other stuff as well.
R1 is your friend.
I thought I'll go and check that out first. So yeah, I basically got the stuff that gave you higher capacity of ammunition.
Yeah.
That one to basically craft your own ammunition effectively. Yeah. And then there was one for, what was the other one that was maybe, that was quite a useful one?
You can get incendiary rounds, can't you?
Yeah, it might be in those ones. Yeah.
That, I think, maybe, was it electric rounds as well?
Maybe more grenades. So
the electric rounds wouldn't kill them, right?
I loved using that. I normally prefer the lethal rather than the non-lethal weapons, but there was something very funny about shooting them with those electric rounds.
and I really liked the hook grenades as well that you could get.
Yeah,
they were really good.
That was a very dark mind that came up with those. Definitely.
They were really good. Really liked them.
Yeah. The hook mines, did you say?
Yes.
Could you put those on a ceiling?
Yes.
Yeah, you could put them any surface, yeah. Oh,
yeah. And then you can upgrade them as well, can't you? So that it attaches a wider to radius multiple. Stuff.
Yeah, because they have good range as well, don't they? And
I love like the ragdoll physics on them.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
One thing I did like, though, and this is the point I meant to make earlier, was I quite like the fact that it basically gives you everything all at once. So after the first mission, when you don't have any powers, but once you get your powers, you have, it's only, as we've said, only a small number of powers and a small number of things, but it's basically all open to you right from the off. So it becomes like a bit of a playground. The downside of that is then not drip feeding anything new. I mean, I spent 12 hours on this, so it's not an insignificant amount of time.
Yeah.
But I felt like, whilst it was kind of exciting at first, say, oh, this is cool, I'm quite powerful straight away, having just come off the main Dishonored 2, the problem is it then just doesn't really go anywhere. That's all you have for the next 10 hours of game. And I think it suffers a little bit in that regard, is that, it kind of shows its hand early, and that's really cool, and some of these things are really good fun to play with. But then, I wonder whether kind of, rather than the last level that they went with, whether they would have been better off coming up with some kind of like gimmick level, like the, Stilton's Manor or something, just to change it up a little bit.
Do you think it really kind of even further restricts the desire to do a second playthrough on this as a consequence? Because the first game, or the main game, that was maybe the appeal, is that you kind of had a different, you could still play in different styles, and but in, you could go down the path of quite a few different abilities and everything as well, whereas on this one you can't.
Yeah, no, it definitely lends itself to one play style as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, even more so because you can't like tailor make your own character with the perils and so.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a whole new set of trophies and achievements here around, you know, going through low chaos, high chaos. But I don't know. I mean, I'm sure lots of people have got enjoyment out of it. But
yeah, for sure. Yeah, definitely. Was it a mid-price release? Did it release at sort of like £25 when it came out?
Yeah, and it's still £25 for an electronic on Steam and on the electronic stores.
Yeah.
£25. Yeah. To be honest, I don't think that's bad value. You know, for a game that 10, 12 hours long, you know, it's not a bad price.
No.
Yeah. I think if you...
It's a well-made game in that respect. In terms of
yeah. Yeah, I've got no problem with... You know, luckily, you know, I already had it. It must have been PS Plus at some point.
Yeah, that's where I had mine.
And I know it's still on Game Pass, isn't it?
Yeah.
But, you know, had I got it on release and paid £25, certainly wouldn't have felt like I'd been shortchanged for the amount of stuff that's here. It's a, it's basically like half of the main game again, isn't it?
Yeah. No, I would play through it once, and I did play through it once, and quite happy with that. To be honest, I don't feel like I need to play it again to get my to get value for money.
Yeah, me too. Very much so. Yeah, it was. One and done for me. I mean, whereas I would be inclined to go back to Dishonored 1 and 2 and play through those again, different characters, different play style.
Yeah,
I think I can't ever imagine myself playing through Death of the Outsider again.
No, so having played through Dishonored 2 and obviously Death of the Outsider, for you and Mads, having played Dishonored 1, where does this sort of sit compared to Dishonored 1?
Death of the Outsider or Dishonored 2?
Just the whole Dishonored 2 package, including the DLC.
What do you think, Mads?
I really like Dishonored 1, and I prefer the DLC for Dishonored 1, like the Brickmore Witches, and what's the one where you get to play as Doubt as well? Knife of Dunwall. They're better than this, if you ask me.
Me too.
But that's because they are more of the same than this is, because this is different, because you get those few abilities. And
but they're more like DLC, right? And I think they're better for being more like DLC.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You know, in a weird way, you know, they're better for being smaller and more of a continuation than this, which I think is trying to be something a bit different. But
I think also narratively they do something more interesting, because when you're fighting your way through Dishonored 1, there's lots of different factions fighting and gangs, and the Brickmore Witches being some of them, and the Doubt who kills Caldwin, what's it called? Jessamine Caldwin, so on. He's definitely an interesting character. You'd like to see his side of the story as well. So those two DLC make sense narratively as well. So I definitely prefer those to Death at the Outside.
Is he quite powerful when you play as him?
Yeah, yeah, yes.
The games are very, very similar. Very similar, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right.
I mean, I'd be dead interested to go back to Dishonored 1 now, because I do feel like you just slot straight into it. They're mechanically incredibly similar.
Yeah.
Dishonored 1 was, you know, in my opinion, I preferred Dishonored 1 just because it's a bit more, you know, it all felt very fresh.
I like that you can play as both Emily and Corvo, and that they have very different styles here in Dishonored 2. So I think I actually prefer Dishonored 2 if we are just talking about the game itself.
I don't think there's a huge amount in it, though. You know, they're both very well made computer games that if you like those, you know, where I think I struggle with it is I'm not a very creative game player. So I like, you know, I like a good story, but when it comes to actually playing the game, you know, I'm not very good at like experimenting with systems. So I
know what
I
you mean.
Like
yeah.
A lot of it's lost on me because I don't, you know, like, yeah, I marvel at, we always mention Maupin, don't we? Got to mention Maupin. Always felt like, you know, Maupin setting himself, you know, trying to go through a whole level by using a dumpsters full of blood flies. Like,
and succeeding.
That kind of stuff would not come, it wouldn't even occur to me to do it, never mind achieve it.
Yeah.
You know, so, sometimes I think these games are probably too clever for me in terms of the gameplay systems and what the possibilities that you've got.
Yeah.
And therefore, I don't get as much out of it as some.
Yeah, and the potential hours of play that are in there as a consequence. I mean, when you think about the value for money that you could end up getting out of these games.
Yeah, for sure. This is an interesting one, though. Like, we've all played Prey, same developers, a lot of similarities, I think, in terms of gameplay systems. You know, Andy and Jim, where does this rank as against Prey?
Oh, different league for me. I much prefer this to Prey. I don't know
why. Yeah, same. I preferred it to Prey.
Did you really?
I think, I was, full transparency, and I think I said as much as at the time, I was short on time when I was playing Prey.
Yeah.
And also, I think it was the first arcane game that I'd played, so maybe didn't quite get on board with the play style that was required to get the most out of the game. But I loved the world. I thought it was great. I thought the setting was fantastic. The presentation was fantastic. But I think we came back to it and I said, it was for me, what should have been such a, in some respects, such a small thing ended up being such a, I just didn't like the enemy characters in it. It just felt really underdeveloped that when the rest of it was so polished. Whereas I think this, just because you're in a kind of more, I love the world that this one is set in also, but I like the fact that it's just a bit more grounded, and I like the, it's great, the kind of, it's like, some of the supernatural elements, the witches, that side of stuff, but, largely it's just human enemies that you're contending with, and it just, the mechanics of this game seemed a bit more, I think just more suited to my playstyle, I think, more than anything else, or how I like to play my games to get the enjoyment off them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I felt like I got the game more than I did Prey.
Okay.
Yeah. I think narratively, I prefer Prey, because Prey has a great story to tell, right?
Yeah.
And it's, I love the setting, and I liked the enemies, but the mechanical stuff, it Dishonored is so much better, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, I think I fall down on the side of Prey.
Okay.
Maybe because of the setting. What's it called? The space station on Prey. We always do this. So I've got Ishimura in my mind, but that's Dead Space.
That's not it.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
We're all as bad as each other. I don't know. I prefer Prey. I prefer the concept, and as I said, I think probably due to my lack of imagination when it comes to enjoying these systems, probably preferred. Yeah, I think I did. I think I did prefer Prey. Mm. Maybe I just prefer a sci-fi setting as opposed to a kind of, a steampunky thing like this.
Prey was a lot more spooky, wasn't it? A little more suspense. I mean, in Dishonored, you feel all powerful most of the time.
Yeah.
Whereas in Prey, you did really feel like you're being hunted.
Yeah, a bit more of a survival horror kind of experience, exactly.
I think looking at, I think maybe the story was possibly a bit stronger in Prey, but mechanically it was, I preferred Dishonored. But I'm also wondering, I said to you, Chris, at the weekend, I think an element of that for me is I enjoyed Expedition 33 so much. Yeah. Any game that I played after that was probably going to feel a little bit worse off because of how much I enjoyed Expedition 33.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. That maybe, narratively, mileages vary, of course, but narratively, like maybe whatever game we were going to play after Expedition 33, it's probably unfair to compare, as I said earlier, the superficial story I quite enjoyed in Dishonored 2. What I found, though, in Death of the Outsider was every time there was a little cutscene, although I really liked the way the cutscenes are presented, by the way, with like the sketch style.
Mm. Yeah.
Whenever there was story being told, I find myself just switching off and not really listening, and then thinking, what did that just say? Oh, forget it. I'm not interested.
Mm. To be fair, I was making far more of an effort to engage with it this time around compared to Prey, but there wasn't anything like that level of in-game lore in Prey, was there, of reading and documents?
No.
And
I
think there was too much, I do that. I think it was arguably too much in Dishonored, too much presented in that way. It was just death.
There was a lot of stuff in Prey around the characters, Not so much like this. This does like a big sort of world building with the with the lore. Whereas in Prey, it felt a lot more character focused.
Yeah, go back to that point that I feel like they've created an interesting world, but not really that interesting a story in it, and not they haven't populated what could be an interesting world with interesting characters. You know, and I did find, and maybe it was just a little bit of fatigue, I don't know, but I found myself from a story perspective, I didn't really care, to the point where I skipped the final cutscene.
Really? I mean, yeah, you probably didn't miss too much, but...
let's talk about the story. We've been waffling on for 40 minutes and we haven't even told anybody what we're playing here. I mean, we were playing Death of the Outsider and it's set a couple of months after the end of Dishonored 2. Now we're... Megan, or Billy Lurk, as she's really called, returns to Kanaka to find her mentor, Daud. And that's how the story starts. And in the first mission, she finds him in the boxing ring where he's been, what have they done to him? Drugged or something like that? And they use
him, aren't they?
Suppressing his powers, aren't they?
I guess they're letting him use some of the powers in the actual fights then, because he keeps winning the fights that they make him do. But yeah, you find Daud, and Daud wants to kill the Outsider. And this is where the story, the narrative fell on the floor for me already, because he doesn't really give us any reason. It's more just, I'm going to kill that bastard. Why? Well, it's because he gives people powers. Okay, so let's remove the guy who gives people powers. Now we'll just have random guys, witches, drawing power out, because they're not getting their power from the Outsider. They're drawing it out of the void in some other way. So what makes the difference if there is an Outsider or not? There'll still be people drawing on the void, because there is power in the void. And the Outsider is just a person that has been killed within the void under some ritual some hundreds of years ago. And that's all. But now he's this god figure, and Daud wants to kill him. That's what we need to understand. And here we go, and already there I lost the interest in the narrative, because they're not really presenting their case very well, are they? Why do they want to kill him?
But why does Billy even go looking for Daud?
If Daud is her father figure, really, he picked her off the street, and gave her a chance as an assassin, and she wants to make good with him again, because they didn't split on good terms. Right. So she wants to make good with him again. And that's why she's looking for him.
Okay.
Yeah. And Daud, in the next mission, he dies, I think. He's on the Dreadful Whale, he dies. And Billy burns the Dreadful Whale because she doesn't want to become Megan again. Now she's Billy and she's on a mission. She wants to kill the Outsider. Mm. So she's trying to carry out Daud's mission. And through these, what are they? Five missions. Let me just have a look here. We've got...
It's like four main missions, isn't it?
Yeah, we've got one last fight, which is, of course, finding Daud, who's in the fighting ring there.
And then there's... We don't have any powers in that mission.
Once again?
We don't have any powers in that mission.
No, you don't.
And I thought it was really cool as a result. Because it felt very different to Dishonored 2 because of the no powers thing.
Yeah, but you don't have powers in the first mission in Dishonored 2 either. Because you need to go through the first mission before you meet the Outsider and he gives you the mark.
So. That's true. What, escaping the tower?
Escaping the tower and getting all the way down to the Dreadful Whale.
Yeah,
you're right, of course.
Next mission is Follow the Ink, and that's where we get our tattoo so we can be Annihilus, and we kill this singer and steal his stuff and whatever we feel like doing there.
And you get a special knock.
Get the special knock that Andy used, yes. And then there's the bank job. I think we should get back to that at some point, maybe. Just talk a bit about that, because that was a fun mission, wasn't it?
You need to break
into the bank to find the dagger that can kill the Outsider. That's the actual dagger that killed the Outsider initially, but I guess he didn't die. But the person, the Outsider, was stabbed by this dagger when he became the Outsider. Yeah. And for some reason, stabbing him again is going to kill him. And then you go to the stolen archive, and then you finish off in the most dreadful mission I've played in any game for a long, long time, A Hole in the World. It was so bland and boring. I was just running through it to get it over with.
It's a very strange choice I think they made.
Yeah, yeah.
You go down into the mines, don't you?
Yeah, that, it's very that, boring.
You go down into the mines and you go into the void.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
And you get these void creatures that you can't really... I mean, they I don't know what
practically like. Indestructible.
Yeah, practically indestructible. You just have to leg it whenever you see them. Do a Brace of Robin and just run away. And
but
then
they
you...
also render your semblance useless as well because they can detect you. And,
yeah, yeah.
And it's just such a change-up, isn't it? That, like, it's just a change, like a new enemy type right at the end of the game when the fun is... you know, messing around with all that you've been doing. And then all of a sudden you can't really do any of that because these things will just spot you and, yeah, like you, Mads. And then the maze-like mines where it wasn't really clear, the route through, and every room looked the same and there was nothing interesting. Like, you think about the boxing club, great setting.
Yeah.
It's just a really cool setting with the boxing ring and the...
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was great.
I mean, I think you've said it many times, Chris, that when they have very condensed environments and there are multiple ways of getting around, that's when this game shines. This was definitely big open spaces, and it felt like every other room you entered was meant to be a small arena. Now there's three characters to fight. Now there's four characters to fight. I mean, and it didn't really feel like Dishonored anymore.
It's showcasing the game at its worst when it's giving you combat arenas because that you know, when you're in those direct combat situations, that is, for my mind, the game at its worst.
Yeah, for sure.
The game is at its best when you're creeping around and you're finding routes and, you know, the bank is perfect for that. I even enjoyed the mission 4 where you had to get the silver graph and with the witches like that, you know, that was a cool mission as well. And Mission 5, and there's so many cultists in the final mission.
Yes.
I use semblance to get through, but the problem is when you use semblance to get through, you've then got to get back. And if you haven't killed them all, they're all there.
And I think even
50 times.
You know, and we're all playing it slightly differently, but I think even when you were going through it with a very, or sort of as lethal a playstyle as possible, you're still sort of trying to do it in a less direct way. And so anytime you ended up in direct combat, that, like you say, that was when the game was at its worst. That's you've effectively failed if you end up in direct combat, because it's then just, it becomes, the mechanics aren't there to have a proper kind of confrontation with somebody.
No, it becomes a mediocre at best first person shooter.
Oh, totally. Yes. Yeah. You're just, it's almost like, do you remember when you used to play, we used to get into fights in NHL 93, like, and you used to wait for somebody to try and punch you, and then you'd pull back, and that is basically what the fight, if you get into direct combat with somebody, that's what it felt like in this game, and then you just run up and stab them, and then run back. You basically had to get out of the, you know, away from them altogether to then get some sort of, just to allow that, because the game doesn't play well when it's fast-paced.
No.
Yeah, I feel like in terms of like grenades and stuff like that you're using to take on multiple enemies, there's plenty for normal use, but once you start getting into big brawls, you'll soon burn through all that and have to go to the shop to buy them.
Yeah, but it's not meant to be played that, like, I feel like, you know, they're to be used as tools rather than, you know, this is not Doom.
No.
Is it,
no.
You know, where you're lobbing grenades around left, right and centre, and it's not Halo, which we're about to discover, but they're meant to be used as tools for things, you know, but like Andy said, you know, the amount of times in a final mission when I would end up in a 6-on-1, 7-on-1, trying to fight my way out of it and then ultimately would die, blimey, you know, I must say, guys, I did contemplate, I just thought, you know what, I'm done, like... Life's but I knew hard. I was so close to the end.
I was so tired of the game, especially that last mission just sucked any will to play it out of me.
Yeah.
So when I finally got to the Outsider, I actually decided not to kill him because I thought, why should I kill this guy? I really don't get this narrative. I don't want to kill him. But when I got there, I found out there is a way to do it without killing him. But I had to go somewhere else and pick something up, and I couldn't be asked, so I just stepped.
that's pretty much it. Yeah, I was like, I was at a good place to finish the game.
I don't want to do this. I just don't have the time. So,
well, see, I did do the thing that opened up the non-lethal route.
Okay,
but when I got to him, I couldn't understand which choice was the non-lethal one.
Oh,
so I kind of guessed and ended up stabbing him anyway.
Okay.
And I had gone and got the blooming thing for the non... Because you end up getting a key when you touch the eye thing.
Yeah.
There's a body right next to it that has got a key. And you have to go back into the cultist thing to find, like, these quarters where there's a thing... Yeah, I don't know. There's a thing that you have to find that allows a non-lethal solution... But as I said, when I got to the choice kill or not kill, it's not as simple as kill or not kill. It gives you like some cryptic message, and I chose the wrong one.
No.
And I was annoyed, and that's why I skipped the cutscenes. I thought, I'm not watching this. I didn't want to kill him.
Does it ever explain where the... I know they come from the void, these big creatures, but does it... What causes them? What are they, like, the void guardians of the void? Or
yeah. They looked a bit like the creatures from Prey, actually. A tiny bit.
Yes, they do a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Not there's as generic.
There's a definite style with Arcane, isn't it? You know, you can see it, like, in the enemies. And all of their, like, NPC characters have really big hands as well.
Yeah.
Yes, they do, yeah.
Acromegaly.
Yeah. What?
Acromegaly. It's a condition where you've got giant hands. And
is it?
Oh, is it?
Yeah. And I think you've got a very like a very forthright personality as well. Like, you sort of struggle with people's personal spaces and boundaries. So it's a world of acromegalous men.
Oh, I didn't know that was a thing. Is that a thing that Prince Charles has got with a big, like?
That's just sausage fingers.
Sausage fingers.
No, I think that's something completely different. That's just probably a very bad diet and inbreeding, I think.
Too much of that one, I Yeah, acromegaly.
Yeah.
Yeah, you learn something new every day.
I know.
Andy's dropping the knowledge.
Yeah. Plenty more where that came from. None of it relevant or useful.
Knowledge hookbox.
I mean, we've just spent the last 5 minutes talking about probably the nadir of the game, in my opinion, the final level. But there's good stuff. As I said, that boxing club is... Andy, you took a few guys to the boiler there, didn't you?
Yes.
How many bodies did you incinerate at once?
Everyone, however many that was. It's you couldn't fit them all in, unfortunately. It was I literally spent about an hour, and you would get to a point where you were having to, like, the first few that you put in, you had to throw them so they went right to the back of the boiler so that you could then sort of build it forward. But then it got to a point where you were trying to get the last couple in, is that you would throw one in, and then they would sit there, but then you would see them slowly sliding back out again. Or they would, like nudge somebody, and then they would slide out and take their place. So it's
got legs like glitching through the side of the boiler and stuff.
I was disappointed you couldn't get them all in one go, but they all went there. The dogs went in as well. Everybody went in.
Do you, anyone else worry about Andy?
I just get on the wrong side of him.
I just like to know what's possible. I'm curious.
Yeah, how many bodies can I fit in this?
Well, they give you the boiler, clearly with the intention of incinerating that dog, and so they've planted the seed, and you're like, well, okay, fine. You know, the boiler burns
the dog,
things.
Good for everyone else.
Yeah, let's see what else we can get in there. Let's see what the limits of this game are. I just like testing the limits of things. That's all it is. There's no need to worry about me whatsoever.
So, did anybody meet the shopkeeper that had the prisoners downstairs?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Yes. And I threw her into the blood flies.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah.
this shopkeeper that if you get into her, you find a key, I guess, when you're rummaging through her stuff, and you can get into the basement. And in the basement, she's chopping people up and planting blood flies into them while they're still alive, and so on.
Blimey!
Did you realize that guy was, because he was one of the side contracts, I think, wasn't he?
Yes, I think he was. Yeah.
Because I was basically working out, because there was then the... Am I thinking of the right one here? So yes, so there was the wheel outside it, wasn't there, that ultimately released the blood flies into his...
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I didn't realize that's what it did. And so that one was actually accidental, where I opened it up and then all the blood flies went through and killed him, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah, and then what you can do, if you knock her out, you can throw her in there, then open it up and let the blood flies attack her.
Nice.
Killed her. After I went to the basement, I got this guy out. I could just walk straight past her. She didn't know anything had happened, so I just walked past her and step, and then I went.
I don't remember what I did. I remember choking her out, and I'm trying to think what I subsequently did to her. I don't remember, but and then there was another one as well, wasn't there? There was one with the where there was the dogs, wasn't there? That was you.
Yes, there's two dogs in there in a two, cell.
Yeah, there was that white dog, wasn't there?
Yeah, that's in the
that's right, yeah. Isn't it? Yeah,
yeah.
Where the mission is to kill the white dog and incinerate it.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Then there's a mime that you have to kill, but make it look like an accident.
Yeah. I thought I'd done a really good job with that. I choked him out so he was unconscious, and then picked him up, and you had to jump to get him high enough, but jumped and threw him over the railings.
I did that as well.
Yeah, and threw him into the canal. There was nobody around to see it, and I thought, that's going to look like suicide.
Yep.
But apparently not.
No, nope, you need to pick him up, people? And then you have to go down the stairs to the left all the way to this special place where you can throw him out. Do the exact same thing that you just did, but in another location.
Okay. What did you do about the two people that were watching him perform?
They weren't there. They were there initially, and then when I came back to get him, they'd gone off, and it was just him by himself.
Yep.
He was muttering something next to his little sandwich board advert.
Oh, I just shot him in the head and failed the function.
and people were suspicious. I don't understand.
They just ran away then.
They did.
Yeah. So yeah, you probably didn't look too much like an accident.
No. Did you do the one where you have to follow the person who's blackmailing everyone, and you follow them from the bank all the way back to the little bench?
I kind of ran out of steam after, I think, mission three. I think I tried to do them all in mission two. I did them all in mission one. I tried to do them all in mission two, failed at least one, might have failed two. And then in mission three, I kind of did. And then I was starting to feel like, it's taking too long.
Yeah.
I think one of my markers was like 130, whatever the distance meters, whatever it is away. I thought, sod that. And then in mission four, which is the last one, I think you get the contracts, isn't it? I kind of clicked on them in the black market, but I didn't even bother.
Yeah. Yeah. So apart from whatever we said right now, is there anything you'd like to talk about with Death of the Outsider before we go on to some waffling? Because now we're opening up for a whole new game.
I've got a question.
Yeah?
So it's unlikely we're going to see a Dishonored 3.
Yes.
Okay, two-prong question then. If there was a Dishonored 3, would you be interested in playing it? And second limb of the question, Deathloop and Redfall are the other Arcane games that exist and we've not played. Would you be up for playing something like Deathloop in future?
So I know a bit about Deathloop because my daughter played that as well. She loves these Arcane games, and she's finished it and loved it. So it looks like great fun. Yeah. So I'd definitely be up for playing Deathloop.
Okay. I've had it on my shortlist as well before now.
Yeah, it was well reviewed, wasn't it?
Say again.
It was well reviewed, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Different kind of game, isn't it? I think. Well, different in some ways in that. It's structured around just a one looping day, isn't it? Where you've got to figure out what's going on. And
Although I have got bad experiences with that in the past. So.
What's that a callback?
Outer Wilds.
Outer Wilds.
You love a time loop, Jim.
I'd definitely be up for playing Deathloop, and I would also be very interested in a Dishonored 3, but I'd like the same team to build it, and they're not there anymore, are they?
Because
Arcane did do something special with their games. They did have a special kind of style that I like. So
I think they're good games. I just don't think they're my good games, to be honest.
I think I'm with you
from Prey and then from this. I should probably play the original Dishonored as well, but you know that's a decent amount of hours I've put into their style of game, and I think I enjoy playing them. I would play them, but I probably wouldn't choose to play them. I don't think when there's too many other games I think that I would maybe play beforehand. But like so, this is perfect because you know where it's the case that the decision's is kind of taken out of my hands and it's more just presented to you. Then I have enjoyed them. But maybe just not as much as maybe some other people have. I think it's purely down to my tastes. Because I know there's some good games with some good stuff in there. I just think some of it's lost on me.
Yeah, Yeah, I think when they get it right mechanically, things like the Clockwork Mansion, the bank heist, the second half of Dishonored 2, when they nail those like mechanically, I've enjoyed it.
I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, like the highs are really. I said I think on the last recording, the highs are really high. I've had a really good time with it, so I'd definitely be up for a Dishonored 3 if it was to ever.
It'd be nice. It'd be interesting to see just what they change and what they don't change, and if there ever was one.
You could set it at any point, couldn't you, in history? And
they, I mean, for me, like it's a good game, and at times it's a very good game. When it's at its best, it's a very good game. Mm. When it's kind of regular, it's a good game. And I enjoyed Dishonored, and I've enjoyed Dishonored 2. What I'm not is one of those that absolutely love it. I mean, this game was so well reviewed. Dishonored 2 was, 9 10s out of 10. Like, it's just not up there for me.
Yeah, no, I don't think I'd put it quite that high. But
maybe that's just because it's more of a good thing and not so different from Dishonored 1, really. Because I would put Dishonored 1 up there. That was definitely the best game I played the year that it was released. I absolutely loved it. It was a great experience. Yeah. But with Dishonored 2, you've seen Dishonored 1 before, so you know about this kind of gameplay already. So maybe it's just a bit too much of just more of a good thing to still be a 9 out of 10.
I was just having a little look there. Just as we were chatting, so one of the guys who worked on at least Dishonored 1, and I think he worked on Prey as well. Yeah, I think he was also involved in the founding of Arkane. He's a guy called Raphael Colantonio. So he set up a studio called Wolfeye Studios. They released a game called Weird West in 2022, which is a fusion of like an action role play game, like a kind of isometric perspective. But it's got some immersive sim elements. I mean, it was kind of mixed reviews, 7 out of 10. You know, when it's good, it's really good, but it's a bit janky.
Yeah.
That's one that might be interesting to keep an eye on for future, because that sounds like it could be a fun playthrough title, you know, with a lot of the DNA of the likes of Prey and Dishonored, but in a bit more of a kind of a, almost like an indie game type setting. I don't know. Maybe that'd be more fun than something which feels a bit slick and polished.
Yeah, maybe. Although, yeah, they went for it. They did go for it, didn't they? You look at the voice acting
big budget
Dishonored
stuff.
2 and the DLC. Michael Madsen voices
that. I was literally about to say that. The whole way through the game, it was bugging me, and I assume he'd played out in the first. Did he?
He must have done, I can't remember. Probably.
But you know that way where he's got such a recognisable voice, and every time I was thinking, who is that? That's really bugging me. I thought, I'll wait till I've finished before I look it up, just because, again, you never sometimes when you picture somebody, if it's not who you think or if it doesn't fit the character, it spoils it a little bit. I thought, I'll just wait until the end. And then as soon as I read it, I thought, that's exactly who it is.
No expense spared. Do you know what? I'm actually thinking that maybe just like immersive sim games just are not really for me, you know?
Yeah, I think I'm with you on that, Chris. Yeah.
I like them, but I don't love them.
Yeah.
I've played enough of them now. I think, you know, I wasn't massive on Deus Ex. I enjoyed Deus Ex back in the day. But again, I don't look back and think, oh, that's an all-timer.
So no, I do. Maybe I just like these immersive sims, really, because, again, I've only played it once, Deus Ex, back in the day, but I remember loving that game.
Yeah, lots of people do.
Yeah. And they must have sold really well, because there's been loads of Deus Ex games, haven't there?
Yeah, so, some of them. I think Human Revolution's meant to be really good, isn't it? Which is the third one.
I've only played the first one ever, so...
Yeah, the second one I think is a bit mid, but I think the third and the fourth one have got well received.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's the I'm probably the same as you, Chris and Andy. Then really, in the immersive sim thing, because I do love the stealth elements. Like I said before, like Batman, you know, the Arkham Asylum games.
Yeah.
Just some of the possibilities that they throw up are amazing.
Just hurry up and get to Metal Gear 5. Jim, and then you'll
never, yes, of course, obviously, yeah, the Metal Gear games.
You will never have to worry about another game of that type again.
Well, I've got to play Peace Walker first, I've been told.
That's fine. Yeah, so just a warm-up, but it's the game that it perfects it. It caters to all tastes. And if you want to do the stealth side of things, you can do it so well. It's brilliant.
Cool. High praise.
There we go.
There we go.
So, guys, that was Death of the Outsider. And now we're going to some shooty shooty bang bang.
We are. You caught me with slurp on
shang shang. Yes. That as well, Chris. That as well. But you need to submit a photo before you can use that now in the UK, I think.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it? Dust out your dust off your plasma grenades and what was it? Assault rifle was the big one, wasn't it? On Halo,
was it? I've never played it. I don't know.
Yeah. I've been playing a tiny bit of Halo 1. There's I don't know what the CE stands for, but there's a CE edition of Halo 1 where you can switch between modern graphics and then just press tab, I think it is, and then you can see the original graphics as well and play the first Halo. It's in the Master Chief Collection.
It's pretty nice. It's just Combat Evolved, wasn't it, the CE?
Okay, this must be a remake because you can switch between two different graphics modes. So
that's not new. That Mads, I think that came out in like, didn't it come? It was like an anniversary edition, wasn't it?
Yeah,
2016 maybe.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah,
runs really well, and it's good fun to play. So,
Halo 1. I mean, Halo 1 to 3 are.
Oh, yeah, well, I think even Reach.
Some of my first person
Reaches. Yeah, Reach was unbelievable back in the day.
I played ODST. I didn't play Reach.
Oh, have you not?
ODST, I remember trying Reach and never really liking it, so it just bounced off it really quickly.
Oh, you see, so I thought narratively they nailed it with Reach as well. The shooting was good, the multiplayer stuff was good, the narrative was good. I think that was probably, for me, perfect Halo, peak Halo.
Was that narratively, still Bungie?
We're going to have some words when we get to Infinite, mate.
So was Reach still Bungie by that point? It must have been. Yes, it was.
It was the last one they did before they went Destiny.
Bungie know how to make a shooter, don't they?
They do. And part of the problem that I think I had with... So I played Halo 4, but I didn't play it until after I played Destiny. And I played all through Halo 4, wishing I was playing Destiny, basically.
Yeah.
I never bothered with 5 because that didn't review well.
So Halo 4 was that with the 343 then? Or?
Yes, that was the first one that they'd done sort of on their own.
Yeah.
So we're talking Halo because the next game is Halo Infinite.
Halo Infinite, yeah. So I thought, again, rather than going straight in at 5, because I knew it didn't review well, apparently it's a bit of a departure for the series. So I thought,
would you go straight in at 5?
Well, four sort of started a new...
It's like Yakuza all over again.
If you're going to go straight in, you've got to go straight in at 1, haven't you? What are you going straight in at 5?
No, because 1 would be a retro game, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would, but let's face it, the rules are there to be broken, aren't
they? But you're not playing Halo 4, the narrative, are you, as well? So let's be honest.
But
Halo Infinite, so why Halo Infinite? So Halo Infinite was apparently the big reset for the series. 4 came out, did okay. 5 came out and bombed. So Infinite was going to be the big reset for the series. It was going to be this ever-expanding new open new world with new missions would be unlocking, and it was basically going to be like Destiny. That was the ambition. It was going to be Destiny, but set in the Halo world. So it got shown, didn't it? I think
you remember
it was
that trailer.
And everyone was like, oh, my God, what the hell is this?
Looks like an Xbox 360 game.
Yeah. And then it kind of disappeared. Then it kind of disappeared again for a little bit. And then came back and everyone was like, looks a bit better. And then it came out and famously didn't have multiplayer, like co-op, which was like one of the main sort of selling points of Halo. So it's just... It got added later, but it's just fascinated me. This game, this series, I loved... I like 1, 2, and 3 and Reach, ODST. I absolutely loved it in like my sort of late teens, sort of early 20s, whatever it was. Yeah, early 20s it would have been. absolutely loved it, and it's kind of just got, for me anyway, it got worse with each with each one after 3-4-3 took over. But 5 was going to be this big grand reset, and it reviewed sort of okay, but then later on when everything got patched in, I think the narrative is now that it's actually a pretty decent game. So
never,
it'll be
a, never really got a chance, did it? Because it was so ridiculed after that first trailer.
That's right. Yeah.
What was the one that was cancelled by Sony? What was the one that they released? Concord.
Yeah.
Yes, Concord.
It reminded me a little bit when Concord launched, and that got absolutely hammered, didn't it? After that trailer,
never stood a chance, did it? Never stood a chance.
Made me think, God, this is what happened to Halo Infinite. Whereas Halo Infinite, they obviously couldn't, they had to push through, and in the end, it feels like they've salvaged it. Where people who play it now without any kind of prejudgment, I've heard it's a really good game. But let's face it, it didn't do anywhere what Xbox needed it or wanted it to do.
It didn't, did it? It didn't do the numbers, and it didn't do anything fresh for the franchise. They came out, didn't they? I think maybe a year after the game, and said sort of that's it for content updates in terms. I think they did like Halloween stuff this year. But it was like an iteration. It was like brand new content, I think.
It was skins or something, wasn't it?
So like there'd be no new story content, whereas the whole plot was that the whole sort of thing behind it was going to be all new story content getting constantly added, and you were going to come back to this ever-evolving world. And then it just, the engine just wasn't up to it.
Isn't up to it. I've been playing it a bit. I've had crashes on the Xbox Series X. I've had hangs. I mean, when you play it, all of a sudden the screen won't move and nothing will happen for 5 seconds, and then you go on again. That happens like 20 times.
They should have patched all that stuff out.
And even cutscenes that all of a sudden, blah, then you go do something else that happened once as well. so it's still buggy.
Yeah, that's crazy now. That should not be happening.
No.
Yeah,
but I can say if people are playing this, when it starts doing the whole stuff with hanging, where it kind of like you run around and nothing happens for 5-10 seconds, and then you run around a bit again, and it'll happen like 10 times in a row. Turn off your console, all the way off, and turn it on again, because it could be sometimes when the Series X does this, you know, quick start, when it quickly reloads, it feels as if it's when it's doing that, then sometimes this hanging happens in Halo Infinite. I've never seen it in any other game, but in Halo Infinite it does.
Interesting.
Yeah. What are the multiplayer options then?
So you've got deathmatch, you've got co-op, that's all in there now. Deathmatch is across all the levels from old Halo games. So my hope is we're going to split it into 2 episodes. The first staging point is going to be at the end of Mission 7, which I think was called Spire off the top of my head. Basically what I did was just looked at the mission titles, and the one that comes after Spire kind of sounded like a good sort of story point.
Yeah.
So I kind of went for that. But campaign, I think, is around 10 hours if you were to mainline it. So my thought was, if you split it in the middle, that gives plenty of time then to replay missions in co-op if we want to do that. Some multiplayer stuff on the Discord. And it's not then just going to be like so much pressure to do the story. Do you know what I mean?
And this is definitely a game where you can put as much into it as you want. I mean, your first staging point there, you say, is to the Spire. You can do that in 5-6 hours, I think.
Okay.
But you could also spend 30 with no problems at all, because there's all sorts of little extra things you can go around and do instead if you don't want to just beeline for the narrative missions.
Yeah, I've heard there's like high level targets you can hunt down and all this sort of stuff. So again, all that sort of stuff, I don't know if you've played much Destiny, but all that sort of stuff does sort of lean into
raids
and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, where there's things kicking off on the map and you have to get over there So I think
getting into some co-op could be good fun.
Yes. I'm interested to see how it'll work in terms of multiplayer, if we can all be on the map and we can all run off like in Destiny and go and take down like a big sort of target or something like that.
Yeah. I'm guessing it's you. What one of us is the fire team leader, so you're probably yes. will be helping that guy getting yeah. through his missions. That's probably how it works, I think.
I mean, I wonder yeah. whether it's worth Jimbo over the next few weeks, like whilst we're playing Halo, is just almost like schedule some multiplayer where we can we can all jump on, but also then we can post it on Discord and say, right, you know, there might be some more ad hoc, you know, kind of organized games, but we're going to aim for, like, you know, these, we're going to kind of hit at least these dates, and yeah, you know, maybe like three of the four of us will be on guaranteed at these times. We stick it in the diary and almost
I'd be up for that, because like I say, when we played Call of Duty 4, that was a fantastic few weeks playing.
I want to do more of that this time. Realistically, we're going to be, so it's the 3rd of November now. I mean, realistically, we're going to be playing this probably until just before Christmas, I would have thought.
That was my thought. And then it'll be God of War over Christmas.
If we can try and get God of War launched just before. So we've basically got 6 weeks. So, I mean, if we could get in, you know, maybe like 3 booked in sessions, you know, where we say, right, 3 evenings, we're going to do multiplayer. You know,
we can do what we did with Call of Duty, though, is that we kept the multiplayer going for some time afterwards as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Once we kind of
moved on to the next game, there was it was quite a few months, I think, that we kept. They slowly fizzled out, and these things kind of have a natural lifespan. But it was definitely, even though we'd finished the game, we weren't ready to finish the multiplayer side of things. And there was always, you know, there was quite a few nights where it was just Friday or Saturday nights where we just quick chat and see who was around and then log in and just.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
And we'll go on and play as many rounds of Wet Works as we could get in, and then
call it a night. Yeah, throwing those grenades around.
timeless gaming memories.
Spawn die.
Blindly throwing grenades in the hope you got lucky.
Brilliant.
Loved it. The most infuriating death for the veterans.
Yeah, and for a series, everyone, I think it's one of those series now, Halo, that everyone likes to put down, but. There's genuine. So they, for anyone who isn't aware, maybe I don't know how, but if there's anyone out there that isn't aware, they've just announced sort of Halo Campaign Evolved, which is a 4K remake of the original Halo. Okay. And that's obviously now coming to PlayStation, PC and Xbox, obviously. Mm. But so for the first time, it's going to be on the PlayStation.
So
and
is that the Halo CE edition then, is it?
It's still CE, but
I'm very confused.
It's still CE, but it's Campaign Evolved instead of Combat Evolved. Yeah.
What nonsense.
But it feels like there's genuinely a little bit of hype for the series again.
Yeah,
but which is nice. I think it's nice. Anyway.
So wrong Halo on a PlayStation, though, isn't it? I mean,
I'd play it on the PlayStation. If it's available on the PS5, I buy it. You know the rules.
If this is not the death knell of Microsoft, what is? I mean, imagine Mario being on the Sega Mega Drive.
Hmm.
Yeah, it would never have happened.
It's the beginning of the end of Microsoft as a console, as a platform holder.
Oh, Mario was on the CDI, so
it was, of course, and Zelda. I think because maybe as a dedicated platform creator, I think I'd agree. I could still see them putting out Xboxes, but like licensing it out.
With having an Xbox app on the PlayStation?
No, I was thinking more along the lines of, you know, like what they've done with the handheld.
Yeah, it's an Asus or?
It's a ROG Ally.
Yeah.
ROG Ally X, isn't it? But it's kind of like that the 3DO model, if you like.
Yeah.
I could maybe see that.
We got all excited about it. Just put a Sega sticker on it, we'll buy it.
Mate, I'd be there day one.
Do you remember when there was the rumours about a supposed launch, a tie-up between the two of them, and how excited we were all getting?
I mean, you get the fanboys like Jim buying it, wouldn't you? But then you get the sensible people being like, well, what games is it going to have?
Doesn't matter.
It's going to have Sonic, but it'll also be be on everything.
Yeah. But I mean, they feel like they've sold the crown jewels now, haven't they, by allowing Halo and Forza onto the PlayStation. What's the point now?
Gears has already obviously gone.
Yeah.
Gears of War?
Gears of War's that the remake of that's just come out, that's gone to PlayStation as
is
well.
Is it?
Day one it came out on PlayStation and Xbox, yeah.
You know, but it's fine. It's like the evolution of things, isn't it? You know, I won't mourn. I've got no nostalgia for, you know, I've owned every single Xbox. And I maintain, you know, Xbox 360 is only behind the PS2 in terms of consoles for me. You know, I love the Xbox 360. I adore it. That machine, the time, it got me back into gaming. I absolutely love it. I've got a lot of fondness for it. But Microsoft consoles, like, I don't know. It's not really, whatever. If they don't make any more, I couldn't care less.
Yeah. No, I think as well, just little things like the UI never changed between the Xbox One to the Series.
Yeah, it's still crap.
And it's still crap, yeah. And it's just little things like that. I don't know. I get
at least it's not as bad as the PlayStation 5. I mean, that's the most horrible
UI. The dashboard UI is...
Yeah, I like the PlayStation.
You do?
UI.
Yeah.
I can never find anything on the PlayStation.
Man, just go and wash your mouth out. This is like, I will not hear a bad word said about the PS5.
But, sorry.
Exactly. It's funny how it changes, you know, I loved the 360, same as you, Chris.
I
remember getting that, and that was, you know, that was, you know, played, got me back into the Gears series, played that online co-op with my brother, played through Red Dead Redemption, and, you know, Red Dead, obviously, we discussed this at the time that we replayed it. You know, in hindsight, not the game necessarily that it was in my head, or that I held it up to be in my head, but at the time, it was one of the single best gaming experiences I've had, and there were so many moments like that. The kind of also the rebirth 4. Of the Ace Combat series. There were so many games that I loved on the Xbox at that time, and it really felt like that's where the momentum was. And it's just it's a shame that it just sort of seems to have you know, maybe that's purely down to my taste and my experience of it. I'm sure that if I was playing some of these games on the Series X that we've played, you know, assuming they're available on both, had I been playing them on the Series X, I might feel different about it. But I mean, I couldn't tell you what was the last game we played on the Series X. I mean,
I played Clair Obscur on the Series X in the end.
Mm. Yeah, me too. I think Hades I think Hades was the last game I played on the.
Oh, because that was Game Pass for a while, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think I've played. I've got no desire to play. I think, like you say, it shows you where the industry's at in terms of 90% of the games that I'm wanting to play, I can just play them on the PS5.
Do you know what? Yeah. If I had to lose, I've got fortunate enough to have both Series X and PS5, like we all have. If I had to lose one of them, I would definitely lose the Xbox. But I reckon I've played 10 times the time on the Xbox than I have on the PS5 in the last 12 months. Just because of the games we've been playing.
And because of Game Pass. I mean, Game Pass.
And because of Game Pass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I've hardly touched my PlayStation 5 apart from playing games with you guys. I never turn on my PlayStation 5, but the Xbox Series X is on all the time.
Yeah.
I think
that's the problem. I think for me, Game Pass, it feels like I am then, it almost feels like I'm opening a door I can't close in terms of that. That's the end of my physical collection at that point.
Yeah.
I don't know. But having said that, I mean, there's quite a few games that I'll just install digitally on the PS5. It is the way to play games. There's no two ways about it.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of swapping stuff in and out.
I'll be playing Halo Infinite on the Xbox with Game Pass because it's there, and it's only on the cheap Game Pass I have right now.
Yeah,
I think I'm going to have to buy it, actually. I don't even have the basic Game Pass subscription these days.
I imagine it's pretty cheap, though. If you wanted to go out and buy a disc version of Halo Infinite, I imagine it's pretty cheap.
Yeah.
And then you could just get the base layer of Game Pass to give you the online stuff.
Yeah, I think it's only like $4.99 a month, I think, isn't it?
I was looking at Halo Infinite on Steam because I wanted to play it on PC, but that's like £60.
So the multiplayer is free to play on Steam, but the actual campaign, single player campaign, it's about 60 quid.
I'm not paying that for Halo Infinite. I'm playing it.
Nor should you.
I think you can. I wonder if you can play it with the keyboard and mouse, though, because I think you can. You can obviously plug in a USB keyboard and mouse.
Yeah, but that would feel wrong on the big TV. That would be all wrong.
What's the difference if it's on a monitor or a TV?
The size of it, and that I'm sitting in my couch. It's totally different.
That is the problem, is that when you're on your couch, it's going to be a bit difficult. Where do you put your mouse?
Well,
Metroid. The new Metroid's going to be mouse controls, isn't it?
So
you can play that on your sofa. I suppose that mouse has been designed in that you could use it on your leg.
Yeah, I'm very much excited for the new Metroid, but I am a little bit skeptical about the mouse-driven control. Well,
imagine how frustrating that's going to be. Like, imagine you lost a boss fight because you ran out of leg to run your mouse.
My legs aren't long enough.
Or like a bit of it got like caught in like your leg here if you're wearing shorts or something like that.
I suppose it depends how hairy your legs are. You're part gorilla, then you're going to
be deadly. Yeah, I am going to play God of War on the PS5, though, just because, it's been ages since I've played a game on the PS5, but I have already played that game on the PS4, so I feel like I can justify it to myself to play it. And it did get a PS5 boost as well.
Did it get a Pro boost?
Yeah. I'm angry with
my PlayStation 5 because I've got drift in the controller, and those controllers cost like $1 million, so...
They're terrible.
They shouldn't start drift that soon.
So I've got 6 PS5 controllers and 5 of them have drift.
Oh, God.
No right? way.
I'm still my original launch controller.
Oh, how are you? So my original, my original launch controller is like pretty much dead. But the other two have been all right. My classic PS1 type controller and my AstroBot controller.
So I haven't even opened the box of the 30th anniversary one.
Neither have I.
Because I thought when my original one breaks, I will start using it at that point. It's just going from strength to strength.
That's my go-to controller, that
it's
one.
Such
I absolutely love it. Yeah, I love it.
I'm still gutted I didn't get that console. I think I would I'd be houseless at the moment because I don't think we would have paid the mortgage that month had I actually bought it. But nonetheless, that's one that got away in life.
Yeah, still hoping that certain friends of ours that may or may not work at Sony might come up trumps at some point for us.
With a secret stash.
Maybe. Well, I have said to our friend, who shall otherwise remain unnamed, that, if ever one did come up for sale, let us know within the hallowed halls of Sony, because there's a stash somewhere, isn't there, where,
There has to be.
I am looking forward to playing it again, actually, and I am going to bust out that new controller because it's the only bloody one I can rely on not to have stick drift for God of War. Also feels like a cool game to play over the winter, that, doesn't it?
It'll
fit in very nicely,
cozy kind of, well, it's not cozy, it's bloody difficult at times, but it's, winterish.
Could you do a voiceover while I play it, and like on the Norse mythology side of things, could you be like just sort of providing a running commentary as I play through it on a
bit I'll more do that
the,
of course
a bit, a bit more to the background lore.
Wait, he's just going to spend his whole time moaning about how incorrect it is.
I was hoping Mads was going to explain everything to us.
Actually, I will probably explain everything because that is one of the things I know a lot about Norse mythology, so I love those stories, so I will probably be moaning when they misrepresent it all the time.
It's going to be some absolute bastardized version of it, Mads. You do realize that it's going
to
be
I'm going to pay one of your daughters to gag you.
It's nice to be down with her because, like, the number of times like games have got Scottish people in them that aren't even Scottish, and like it's so poorly represented. It's going to be nice to see how they handle the Norse mythology.
Character in God of War, isn't there, Andy?
Well,
he's got a Scottish accent at least.
Yeah.
Can you remember his name? Is he the fella on the boat? Is he the head?
Is it the head? Anyway, we will find out soon enough.
Does he spend the game going, no.
I tell you, the production values of God of War, I know we're not playing that next, but the production values of God of War are absolutely incredible.
Yeah, I can't wait to play it again, actually. It's good. That's satisfying. It's a kind of... It's something along the lines of, just when we're talking about games that we like here, and we're talking about you know, kind of the Arcane style of games versus more something along like the Horizon series of games. And that's definitely kind of, you know, that's very much the camp that my preferences fall into. And God of War is quite similar to Horizon in that respect.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? But I think it's more like, see, I see it more like The Last of Us in terms of like a linear, more of a linear kind of action adventure game, maybe something more akin to an Uncharted as opposed to...
Yeah, no, very much story driven. And, you know, you kind of, you're always on a sort of, you know, exactly as you say, a very clear trajectory through the game, but then really satisfying combat as you, as you make your way through it all. So that'd be good.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it always surprised me how long it was, you know, for a game like that. It's probably equivalent to like a Last of Us 2 kind of size, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. It's quite a chunky one.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be good. We got some Booty Booty Shang Shang before that, though.
We have. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It'd be good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Looking forward to it.
Good bit of multiplayer also.
Definitely, definitely. What else have we been up to? What else have we been playing? Anything you want to shout out? Got a little bit of time?
I've got one. I've played through Elroy and the Aliens. I forget if I've mentioned this before. Love that. It's a point-and-click adventure. Modern point-and-click adventure feels like the good old days, like a late 90s point-and-click, for example. Great stuff. Good story. Well done. Funny script. Well worth those 8-10 hours.
Anyone that interesting or that we should know who made it? Have they done anything else?
Nope, I don't think so. Small
have
team.
You seen this one that's been around, come out, I think it came out last week for Halloween, The Seance at Blake Manor? Or...
Okay.
I've heard of that, yeah.
The same guys who made Darkseid Detective.
Oh, okay.
That's been getting good write-ups from the adventure, kind of the niche websites online.
Yeah.
And it got a feature on Eurogamer as well.
That's, I think, what I was reading about
over
it.
The weekend. That looks really good.
So Elroy and the Aliens is from 2025 as well, so it's a new release, and I only played it because Pix over at the Retro Asylum Discord was talking about it. It's well worth your time.
Did
you
finish The Drifter?
Once again, Chris.
Did you finish The Drifter?
Yeah, I did. I did.
Is that good?
Yeah, it's really good. I love that.
It's another one I want to play. Yeah. Mm. Damn it, man.
I saw Hero of the Dog that got pushed back to next year, didn't they? It was supposed to be December this year.
Oh, it got pushed this year.
Yeah, that got pushed to next year.
There was the new Ron Gilbert game as well, came out last week. Have you managed to have a look at that yet, Mads?
Yeah, I picked it up just to support Ron, but it's terribly boring.
I've heard it's boring, and I've heard it's really good in like equal measure. Okay. So it seems like a Marmite game.
To me, it's absolutely nothing. It's just mindless and boring. It's not fun at all. It's a auto-scrolling, vertical scrolling game where you move kind of slowly. There's fire at the bottom of the screen, so if that touches you, you die. And then you just need to... there's only two controls. It's your stick, and then it's the right trigger, which you can press to just for a brief amount of time sprint. And you can only do that once or twice in the level. And then you just have to control. You have to pick up the gems because you need to use those to buy the... It's a roguelike, so you need to buy upgrades that will stay for the next playthrough as well. So you need to pick up the gems. That's important. You need to pick up some gold because you can buy stuff as well. And then you need to avoid the enemies. I mean, if you've got a... If you pick up weapons when you're running around as well, you've always got a melee weapon, so a close combat weapon that you can use. You just bounce into enemies and you'll slash them. But you can pick up bows as well, and then there's a little circle around you, and within that circle you'll try to shoot the enemies with the arrows that you have. And that's it. And every once in a while, the Reaper will come, and you can't kill him. You have to just get him stuck on something, get him to get stuck on a tree or something like that. And then you run through the levels and buy mindless upgrades that makes you 5% faster or gives you 2% more damage. It's exceedingly boring, and even the humor isn't that good. And it's a Ron Gilbert game, so I was very, very disappointed.
That's a shame.
What's that? Death by scrolling?
Yeah, exactly. Death by scrolling.
Death by playing.
But it's more like death by boredom, really.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Maybe you should stick to point-and-click games, eh?
Yep. I'm glad I bought it because I like to support Ron, and then I hope he'll do some more point-and-click games, but this wasn't a good one, if you ask me.
Yeah, Thimbleweed Park 2 would be welcome.
Sure. That was good. Or Monkey Island again.
The new Double Fine game came out to rapturous reviews, didn't it? The Keeper.
Yes.
That's on Game Pass as well, that. If you've got...
Game Pass day one, wasn't it?
Yeah, but that got incredibly well-reviewed, although I've heard people saying once you get over like how beautiful it looks, actually the gameplay is not like brilliant, but
okay.
I've heard some really good things. Again, Eurogamer absolutely waxed lyrical about that game.
Hmm.
So it's nice to see Double Fine doing well.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it feels like ages since the last one.
Yeah, Psychonauts 2.
Psychonauts 2, yeah. And that was
a few years ago.
Was that like 2020, 2019? It felt around that sort of time.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah, Hades 2 is the best, according to Open Critic, the best review game of the year. In a year of absolute stone cold bangers as well. That's not a bad position to be in a month out from the Game Awards.
Yeah. It's on my to play. It's on my to play.
Same, but I'm just not sure I'm ready to go back to it yet.
No,
I think I'd be a few hours into it and I'd be thinking, oh, this is all just a bit recent. I don't know. Another 6 months, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a bit like you and Dark Souls 2, isn't it, really? You just weren't quite ready to...
No.
I'm so ready for another Dark Souls game.
Yeah,
so
me too.
Yeah, it's coming up.
Well, yeah, so it will be coming up. Does that normally come at the start of each new series? Or
it'll be...
ready for it, won't we? Champing at the bit by the time we get to it. Right?
Probably, February, March time next year or something?
Yeah, something along those lines.
February. So it'll be a year, won't it, before... It'll be basically a year between Bloodborne and Dark Souls 3.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Well, I might end up playing them out of sequence in that order. Can you imagine?
You've got plenty of time to get to Dark Souls 2.
I don't, Chris. I don't.
You do.
I don't. You don't I've got plenty of time. I don't have plenty of time for a Dark Souls game.
Yes, you do.
I don't, because I know what happens.
It's the best one.
I know it is. You know what happens when I start playing them.
Only 800 hours.
Everything else stops. Life stops. The world stops spinning. It's just, I don't know. I will try and play it. The other one that actually seems to have been surprisingly well reviewed, not necessarily for the games within it, but it was a day one pre-order for me, is the Mortal Kombat Collection. Have you seen any of the stuff about that? It looks really, really good. So it's the same guys who did that Atari 50 collection.
Digital Eclipse.
Yeah. And they were saying that it's probably that and then a bit more on top of it in terms of how polished it all is. Okay. And they've apparently just got, I think, hundreds of hours of archive footage and documents and scans. And it just sounds really cool. And it says that you can literally be either looking at some of the concept artwork or watching an interview about some of the concepts within the game. And then if you want to, there's a button literally to tap into it live and sort of see it and then play it within the game itself all the game's mechanics.
That is pretty cool.
And it's got, I think, there's a couple of one or two exceptions, but I think pretty much every version of each game that came out, and then also it's got like a load of good filters you can put on as well, which they always have anyway. But for the likes of this, you can have, whereas normally you've got kind of quite often a lot on a like a 4:3 screen, you'll have a lot of dead space down either side. You can use it, and you can have move lists down the side as well, so you can have that for reference the whole time whilst you're playing through it. And they put just loads of quality of life improvements in it, so you can simplify things, you can kind of have, you know, some of the combos or some of the moves that were sometimes quite tricky to do, you can have those mapped to one button. Then things like where you get the option of, you know, sort of all the fatalities or animalities or babalities and stuff, there's options to just have either like the standard time window or an extended or an infinite time window. So whatever. So you can basically just play these games the way you want to. But I think it seems to have been a very, you know, kind of they've done a warts and all kind of port effectively of everything onto it.
They do an incredible job.
They were saying that, you know, the games are what they are. If you didn't like them before, you're not going to like them now. But if you do, or even if you don't, it's all the kind of archival stuff around it that is like a real treasure trove. So it'll be.
And what games are actually in the collection if you just wanted to play the games?
Oh,
there's loads, just while you're thinking, Andy, there's loads. So, but you've also got multiple versions of the games. So yeah. Like for more, yeah. Mortal Kombat 2, for example, you have the Genesis or Mega Drive.
They were slightly different, weren't they?
The SNES version, the Master System version, like the Game Boy versions, the Game Gear versions are
so
in
there. So I think
there.
It's got Mortal Kombat 1, 2, and 3, Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3. I think it's got Mortal Kombat
4's in there.
Yeah.
The Mythologies games
Sub-Zero
are in there.
Sub-Zero Mythologies. It's basically everything that came up to the end of the PS2 era, I believe. And then there's a couple, I think there's an N64 version of one of the games that isn't on it, and I think a PS2 version of one of the games that isn't on it. But I mean,
that's
it's
a collection, it's isn't
a,
it?
And I think the suggestion was, it seemed to be, I think from a couple of interviews, it's like, I mean, geez, it's just no pleasing some people. Like, there was a few people that were complaining about the fact that there wasn't more games on it. And it's just kind of like, you know, they've got to release it at some point. So unless you want it to not come out for another 8 years, then... but I think in an interview they'd said that there was, which I think was subsequently the case with, what was the other collection they did? And I think there was maybe they were hinting at there'll be maybe some.
Oh, they did
content.
Did they do the Jeff Minter?
Yeah, they did the Jeff Minter collection. Ah, okay, that's one.
Yeah,
I want
so
to
I think
so
stuff like that where there'll be maybe I paid or otherwise of additional DLC that will add in subsequent entries into the series, potentially even bringing it right up to the kind of the pretty much up to the modern entries. But yeah. I mean,
was it nine?
That.
Was it nine where they kind of reset it a little bit?
Yeah,
I think yeah.
It sounds, I mean, as you guys well know, they're not my cup of tea, the Mortal Kombat games, but I love the work that Digital Eclipse do.
Yeah, exactly. I was just about to see. Yeah.
I think if you was going to play a fighter like that, like you'd get, that's one that you'd get more from because there's a proper storyline in there.
Yeah,
and yeah, all right, the storyline's a bit naff and cheesy and all the rest of it, but there is a storyline in there.
I need to know Johnny Cage's origin story, man. I just need to know.
Don't we all?
And the secret affair he had with Sonya.
Yes.
Sonya.
It was Sonya. Sonya Blade.
Sonya Blade.
Sonya Blade. But I mean, it'd be quite interesting because obviously it's got a load of stuff, you know, all about the inception of the ESRB and stuff that came out off the back of it.
That's
all,
what I mean.
All that
so
sort of stuff
cool
is in there as well. That it's responsible for a very very kind of influential game in that respect, I guess. So so that and then the other one that it's been pushed back a couple of times, but I think it's now, is it the end of the month it's coming out? Is that Terminator 2D?
Yes. It's November, isn't it?
I haven't seen any. Have you guys seen any reviews of it yet?
No. I haven't seen any reviews.
No, because there was a feature on it in Retro Gamer, and I think the initial impressions had said that maybe it might be. I don't know if it maybe been pulled for a wee bit of tweaking because there was a suggestion. I think there might have been a wee bit. You could get through it quite quickly. I think maybe a wee bit too easily.
Have you heard? Have you read any hands-on previews of it?
No.
Yes, I think that was in Retro Gamer, yeah.
Was it? See, I get a bit worried when this previews you read are all based on footage and not journalists actually having sat down and played
the
okay,
game.
Okay, so no, this was, they were given a copy of it, I think, to play, yeah.
So you think it might have gone back in for a bit of balance?
Possibly, yeah, sounded as though, it's...
never a bad thing.
Yeah. I think it maybe just needed a wee bit of balancing. And I think there was kind of the option to, I think there's sort of various, I don't know if they're maybe expanding on that, but I think there was different outcomes you could get at the end of the game and stuff as well, depending on, I think there's a few kind of branching paths in it and stuff
cool.
as well. So it's,
I mean, presumably it's a game that it's an indie game, right? And it's going to come out at a price point reflective of the fact that it's not going to take you 50 hours to get through it.
Forget how much it was on the pre-order, to be honest.
It got picked up, didn't it, by like Limited Run or one of those companies. So there are crazy editions.
But presumably you
can
buy a sensible edition on Steam or whatever.
I ordered a physical version on Amazon.
The one I'm looking forward to is Metroid Prime 4. I mean, that's...
I remember being that. Listed at £43.
43 quid?
Yeah.
For a physical, but that'll be all on the cart, hopefully finished.
And there's the Nintendo tax on that as well. So
yeah.
Because what's the likes of Ninja Gaiden just came out, didn't Ninja Gaiden?
Mm.
Ragebound, was it?
Ragebound, yeah.
And then we've had the Shinobi
game. Shinobi.
Which is meant to be good.
Unless you play it on Switch. That irked me.
I kind of put it in that little bracket of those kind of games which are very, very good. You know, but they're and I quite like this, but they're not games that are going to last you for weeks and weeks and weeks. They're going to be just really good, sort of eight-hour games and job done.
Perfect.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, perfect.
That's it. Perfect. Perfect for us. But you know it's going to get the blooming Riot Squad going, don't you?
I'll get both barrels for that. Yeah, I dare say. But yeah, like I say, their negative is my positive. So it's I only care about the games that I'm playing. So it's
exactly that.
Yeah,
I'd rather have eight quality hours than 80 hours where kind of only five of them are decent.
Exactly that. I've been playing Mini Shoot Adventures on the perfect on the deck. I can't believe it's not on the Switch. And that's about a 7 or 8 hour game. I'm just over halfway through. But yeah, brilliant. It's twin stick shooter that's sort of blended with Metroid and Zelda, sort of top down.
Yeah, it's great.
So good. So good.
Speaking of other things that are so good, because I know that it's one that you're quite a fan of, Matt, is have you guys watched Alien Earth?
I know, I've not seen
it. I've seen the first
episode. I've still not seen it.
It's really good.
Mm. Is it good?
I loved it, yeah.
It's not Alien, though. But it's
not Alien, no, but really good. Like a good story.
Is it like what's the Star Wars thing that everyone loves?
The Mandalorian?
What?
No, Mandalorian. Oh, Andor. Everyone loves the Mandalorian.
No, Andor. I've heard it's like Andor for Alien.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a reasonable, probably a fair comparison in terms of like its tone.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good.
Cerebral and kind of dialogue heavy.
Yeah, definitely. And sort of, it's not just, there's kind of a bigger story than just anything relating to aliens. Yeah.
Where does it fit in the canon? Do I have to rewatch every alien thing?
It doesn't. It breaks the canon completely.
This sounds like a sore point, Mads. Is it
today. Mads was like angry. Yes.
I've been watching this with my daughter who loves the Alien series, and we've both been looking at each other. He can't be here because this is happening like a thousand years before he is here and dies, and there's something completely wrong. I mean, for example, the... What's the company called?
Weyland-Yutani.
So Weyland-Yutani is there.
That's
and he dies canonically in Alien 3. Not in Alien 3, in Alien versus Predator. Sorry. So he dies there, but apparently that didn't happen.
That makes me actually want to watch it because the thing that puts me off some of the latest Star Wars things, I'm so behind on the canon.
Mm.
That
this doesn't matter at all. You don't even need to have ever watched Alien for this to be fun. It's a good series.
Andor is in the exact same category where if you've got any appreciation of the Star Wars, the wider Star Wars universe, it's a couple of little moments of fan service. But I'm actually quite glad they kind of steered away from all of that and just focused on the story.
Yeah,
that's well worth a watch. Both seasons are really, really good.
Yeah, see, I've not. I haven't watched any of that, so that needs to
the final list. Recommendation, which I talked about, I think, in the Discord, anyways. The Penguin with Colin Farrell.
Yes, yeah. I want to watch that because they've just the new Batman movie. They've been talking about that, haven't they? And they've said that it's set a few weeks after the end of the Penguin series.
Okay, because I think the Penguin series happens, I think, about a week after the Batman movie with
Robert Pattinson. Yeah. Which I thought was all right. I quite enjoyed that.
It's good.
It's all right.
It's a good film.
I can't keep up with all of this stuff, man.
Yeah.
I still, although I'm pleased to watch, I'm now caught up with the Marvel stuff, really enjoyed Thunderbolts.
I've downloaded that to watch when I was on holiday and never got around to
it's
it.
It's really good. I mean, I've been pretty down on the Marvel movies for the last few years since Endgame. Mm. But this is really good. It's got it's got Guardians of the Galaxy vibes.
Okay. Yeah, it just feels like it's all been a bit like C-list, doesn't it, since Endgame. It's all been a bit Dean Gaffney.
Yeah, since, a little bit. Yeah, just like
Wellard.
Watchable, but not really. But so looking forward to seeing what they do next. So much to play, so much to watch.
That's little time.
But next up is Halo Infinite, and our listeners need to play until they finished taking the first spire, right, Jim?
Yeah. Yeah. Play to the end of Mission 7, which is the Spire, I believe it's called.
Yeah, you say Mission 7.
Yeah, I knew Mads was going to say
that. I've been playing this. There are no mission numbers, so you can't just say play to Mission 7, because nobody will know Mission 7 is. So I think we should just say to our listeners, because they will understand this, play until you've taken the first Spire.
Jim, did you not ask ChatGPT to help?
No, you know my thoughts on AI.
You made it felt very clear. You just ignore it and hope it'll go away.
Exactly that, mate. Exactly that. Find a patch of sand and bury my head in it.
play until you've taken the first Spire. That'll be easy to see, because you definitely know when you've taken your first Spire. That's when you do your first real boss fight as well.
Yeah, okay.
You know my thoughts on AI. It won't give you a mission number, that's for blooming sure. Might be an upgrade. Cool.
There we are. Right. Look out on the Discord for the staging points will obviously go up on there as well. And then maybe we'll set something up for arranging multiplayer matches and stuff like that as well.
Yeah, that'd be good fun.
I'm going to go and start an installer now. Yeah.
So it's 110 gigabyte install, so it takes
just
a while.
Yeah, it's a hefty install.
How many floppy disks is that, Mads?
Quite a lot of floppy disks.
it's playable on Xbox One, Series X, Series S, PC. So
yeah, say playable, but close to
an Xbox One game, though, Jim. Was it a Series X game or was it an Xbox One game?
It was. So it started off as an Xbox One game.
Oh, I need to get my Xbox One out.
And now, oh God, what have I done? No, it's just a Series game. It's a Series game. Yeah, it started off as an Xbox One game until they realised, and that's where they put that trailer out that looked dreadful.
Yeah.
And then they thought, oh God.
It must have been released on the Series X because it's from 2022, isn't it?
Yeah. So
That's all right then.
The X was...
I don't have to get into the loft.
No. Don't just leave that Xbox One. Just throw it in the river.
I can't do that.
Throw it in the river. it's kind of like a Switch 2 game now, actually, that new Pokemon game. It runs on the Switch 1, but it's not the place to play it.
Yeah, the disc fits in the machine, but that's it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it runs on the Xbox One, but it's not the place to play it.
So it was released on December the 8th, 2021.
It was, okay. Yeah.
Would that have been Xbox One or Xbox Series?
Series.
This is a very important
series. Yeah, it would have been the series. Well, it came out on both, I think, at the same time.
Yeah, the series released in 2020, didn't it? So, yeah, we're all
which would have
we're
been,
fine.
Which I think was around, the 20th anniversary.
Stop panicking, Jim.
Yeah.
And then... I'm not panicking, Chris. You're panicking.
Yeah. We're okay to play it on
the cables away, Christopher.
These questions are very important. Otherwise, I'd be sitting there playing it on the Series X, not feeling comfortable.
I think we need to stop the show now. Chris needs to be put to bed.
Yeah.
He's itching to get into the attic and he'd dig out that one, that Xbox One.
I'm starting to wonder whether I have to now.
You have Don Matrick ringing you up.
Which was it originally designed for?
Stop it.
Stop this discussion.
Let's leave it there. Any shout-outs?
Gareth Coker was a composer on it, right?
And with those words, goodbye. Thank you, listeners. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Stay tuned to find out what Chris plays it on.